ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम सेवेंथ कैंटो चैप्टर टू टेक्स्ट 37। श्रीयम उवाच अहो अमीषां वयसाधिकानां अहो अमीषां वयसाधिकानां विपश्यतां लोकविधिं विमोह विपश्यतां लोकविधिं विमोह यत्रागतस्तत्र गतं मनुष्यं यत्रागतस्तत्र गतं मनुष्यं स्वयं सधर्मापि शोचन्त्यपार्थम् स्वयं सधर्मा अपि शोचन्त्यपार्थम्। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रीला एसी भक्तिविदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। श्री यमराज सेड, अलास हाउ अमेजिंग इट इज, दीज पर्सन्स हु आर ओल्डर देन मी हैव फुल एक्सपीरियंस दैट हंड्रेड्स एंड थाउजेंड्स ऑफ लिविंग एंटिटीज हैव टेकन बर्थ एंड डाइड। Thus, they should understand that they also are apt to die, yet still they are bewildered. The conditioned soul comes from an unknown place and returns after death to that same unknown place. There is no exception to this rule, which is conducted by material nature. Knowing this, why do they uselessly lament? Purport. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 2.28, avyaktadini bhutani vyakta madhyani bharata avyakta nidananyeva tatraka paridevana. All created beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifest again when they are annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? Accepting that there are two classes of philosophers, one believing in the existence of the soul and other not believing in its existence, there is no cause for lamentation in either case. Non-believers in the existence of the soul are called atheists by followers of Vedic wisdom. Yet, even if for argument's sake we accept the atheistic theory, there is still no cause for lamentation. Apart from the separate existence of the soul, the material elements remain unmanifested before creation. From this subtle state of unmanifestation comes manifestation, just as from ether air is generated, from air fire is generated, from fire water is generated, and from water earth becomes manifested. From the earth many varieties of manifestations take place. For example, a big skyscraper is manifested from the earth. When it is dismantled, the manifestation becomes again unmanifested and remains as atoms in the ultimate stage. The law of conservation of energy remains, but in the course of time, things are manifested and unmanifested. That is the difference. Then what cause is there for lamentation in either manifestation or unmanifestation? Somehow or other, even in the unmanifested stage, things are not lost. Both at the beginning and at the end, all elements remain unmanifested, and this does not make any real material difference. If we accept the Vedic conclusion as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Antavanta Ime Deha, that these material bodies are perishable in due course of time, Nitya Syokta Sharirinaha, but that the soul is eternal, then we must remember always that the body is like a dress. Therefore, why lament the changing of a dress? The material body has no factual existence in relation to the eternal soul. It is something like a dream. In a dream, we may think of flying in the sky or sitting on a chariot as a king. But when we wake up, we can see that we are neither in the sky nor seated on the chariot. The Vedic wisdom encourages self-realization on the basis of non-existence of the material body. Therefore, in either case, whether one believes in the existence of the soul or one does not believe in the existence of the soul, there is no cause for lamentation for loss of the body. In the Mahabharata, it is said, adarshanad ihayata punash cha adarshanam gataha. This statement could support the theory of the atheistic scientist that the child in the womb of the mother has no life, but is simply a lump of matter. To follow this theory, if the lump of matter is aborted by a surgical operation, no life is killed. The body of a child is like a tumor, and if a tumor is operated upon and thrown away, no sin is involved. The same argument could be put forward in regard to the king and his queens. The body of the king was manifested from an unmanifested source, and again it became unmanifested from manifestation. Since the manifestation exists only in the middle between the two points of unmanifestation, why should one cry for the body manifested in the interim? In continuation of the narration of the story which Hiranyakashipu is narrating to his relatives about how we should overcome lamentation in the case of loss of the body, he is telling the story of a dead king who has left his body on the battlefield, and now the queens are surrounding his body and they are lamenting, loud cries, tears, hair disheveled, clothes disarrayed, all the general signs that life is not worth living in the absence of this personality. And Yamaraj, today's verse, we see Yamaraj commenting, Aho, in Sanskrit poetry or literature, Aho is alas. Aho amisham vayasadhikanam, I'm seeing adults here assembled. Vayasa is why, age. Adhikanam, quite mature. Vipashyatam lokavidhim vimoha. Pashyati is to see. Vipashyati is to see very clearly. Every day, very clearly, these people have seen. What must have they seen? Lokavidhim. The law of material nature. And what is that law? That everyone dies. We see so many living people, but actually what technically to be correct is to see people who are about to die. That's what Yamaraj is mentioning here. But this is vimoha. Vipashyati, somebody sees very expertly for a long time, quite experienced. But then there is vimoha. Moha is bewilderment. Vimoha is very, very strong bewilderment. Yatra agatas tatra gatam. He is saying that human beings, they come from a place and they go back to that place. What that place is not mentioned here. So Prabhupada gives a sort of a purport in the translation itself, that the conditioned soul comes from an unknown place and returns after death to that same unknown place. Unknown doesn't mean unknown to everybody. Unknown to that conditioned soul at least. Unknown to other conditioned relatives of that conditioned soul. That's the unknown here. Otherwise, why should we be discussing a book which has these big unknowns in between? There is a chapter which says the Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Bhagavatam answers all questions. So Vedic scriptures are especially meant for people who do not want any unknown in their life. In a scientific publication printed by the BBT many years ago, there was a joke reprinted from some other magazine. On a huge blackboard, one scientist has made the explanation of the origin of the universe. And it's filled with so many different algorithms, so many equations. And there is one particular corner in the middle. And after that it says, and this is how the universe comes into being. And in that particular corner it is said, and a miracle takes place. These are the words there. So his colleague is understanding everything and he says, could you be a bit more explicit here? Could you explain what exactly is this? I understand the whole thing. This one thing needs to be explained. So even the best brains today, they are at a loss and they take the help of such kind of words as if... And then something happens and the cause is undetermined and we are on the course of finding it out. We have given it a name X and very soon we'll isolate it and that's what we will tell you. That doesn't work. What a real seeker, a seeker of knowledge needs is real knowledge. But since he is talking to these queens, they are not expected to be philosophers. Yamaraj is saying that. He just comes. Yatra agatas tatra gatam, he goes there. Swayam sadharma api shochanti apartham. There is no exception to this rule, which is conducted by material nature. Knowing this, why do they uselessly lament? And this brings the whole event in focus. Just like somebody is trying to make a picture. And you try to go to various angles, various lengths, and then at one point of time, you know that this is what I want, and then you properly focus on it. So the focus here is on why lament? In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, from the verses Nasato Vidyate Bhavo to Avyaktoyam Achintyoyam, that whole series of verse is about description of the soul. What exactly is the soul? And amazingly, in this purport, Prabhupada seems to be taking the view of a news reporter. He says, they claim this happened and they claim this happened. My job is just to report. So in two long paragraphs, he has given this kind of understanding that you choose by your own background to believe in the soul, then 1, 2, 3, 4 happens. And if you choose not to believe that the soul exists, then there will be some understanding. But both come, they both meet at one point, and that is, don't lament. Why should you lament? It is the end of the first chapter. Sanjay has described, evam uktva arjuna sankhye rathopastha upavishat visrajya sasharam chapam shoka samvigna manasa. Arjuna gave one after another very tight arguments. Arjuna's arguments are, if you analyze them independently, all are very good. Not just good, they are watertight. It's like no one else except Krishna can go through it, pierce it. Of course, Krishna discounts them in the second chapter by saying, kshudram. These are all petty. Hridaya dorbalyam. All this betrays pettiness of heart. weakness of heart, pettiness of mind and weakness of heart. Arjuna is sitting on his chariot, Rathopastha, Upavishat, Visrajya, he has given up. Sa Sharam Chapam, Shara and Chapa, his bow and arrow. And what is Arjuna's vow? If anyone makes me tell, if anyone makes me give aside, put aside my bow and arrow, or tells me that, you're not worthy of a Kshatriya, give up your bow and arrow. Either he dies or I kill myself. In one sense, this situation is akin to Arjuna feeling almost like dead. I have no interest in living. He even speaks it out. It is better if I go like this now, walking in the middle of the battlefield, and they just shoot arrows or whatever lances, spears at me, and I die unarmed. At least I will be dead with the notion that I didn't go to kill anyone for my selfish gains. Very lofty, very good ideas. Sometimes people feel that here is one simple soul, ahimsavadi, doesn't have any interest in killing someone, and he's telling Krishna, why engage me in this ghastly warfare? And then Krishna has to make a whole big drama. No, no, kill, kill, kill. And that's what people don't understand. Of course, the reason is they don't understand is they have this envy towards Krishna. There is no respect towards Krishna as being an authority. So in the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, 8th verse, Prabhupada makes in the purport very clear. If you think that Krishna and Arjuna are on the same level, like in your and my life, some friend comes and says, I have this big problem. And sometimes all we need to give is a shoulder for him to cry. That's all. We can't solve it. If somebody says, I lost my father, I lost my mother. You say, okay, come to me for counseling. But will you make the father come alive? Is that possible? So that is the difference. Except for Krishna, no one can undo something which has happened. Like those who use computers, you have this control in Microsoft Word. You do so many things and they say, oh, I don't want this. Just one click, undo. And the whole thing is undone. This sometimes fools us into thinking that we can also do the same thing with our life. You make a mistake and just press undo. No, it doesn't happen like that. So if someone thinks that Krishna, who is giving some ideas, advice, and Arjuna, who is receiving advice, are both on the same level, Prabhupada says that book should be thrown out. That Gita is no value. However, if you have this faith that Arjuna is a conditioned soul and Krishna is the Lord of the universe, he's a supreme Lord, that means the supreme master of all laws, all regulations, the owner of all potencies, the control of everything and the enjoyer of everything, then you are on the right track towards understanding what is Bhagavad Gita. So I just made a small compilation. There are 9 verses, one after another, where Krishna is saying, first he says, Tyaktvatishta, get up. Don't just sit there. Now how can somebody get up if he's lamenting? His getting up also would be like very lethargic. When Krishna is saying, Tyaktva Uttishtha, get up. It means give up lethargy, give up lamentation. In verse 15, he says, Titikshasva, you have to tolerate. You just can't be lamenting like this. 2.18, 25, 26, 27, 28, 30, 31. Natvam shochitum arhasi, tatra ka paridevana. Again and again and again and again, Krishna is describing something so very far away and bringing to one conclusion. Therefore, don't lament. So it seems the whole issue is, I don't really care what kind of problems you have, but don't lament. It seems like there is some kind of urge for action. And action cannot take place when there is no will, no determination. Today is supposed to be the blessed appearance day of one great Shaktavesh avatar, Lord Jesus. He once told his followers, be hot and oppose me. I mean, be hot and follow me, or be cold and oppose me. But if you are lukewarm, I spit on you. Make a choice. If you think I am the Messiah, follow me. If you think I am not, then oppose me. But don't be wishy-washy, willy-nilly, either here nor there. Lord Chaitanya condemned this while using Mukunda Sanjay as an instrument, saying he is a Khadjatiya Beta. Khadjatiya Beta is in the family of devotees, when there is bhajan kirtan going on, Radhe Radhe Krishna Krishna, he would chant the same thing. But if he goes to another assembly where there is some Mayavadi katha going on, people are saying Gyan, Gyan, and he'll say, yeah, that also is true. He says, no. He touches my feet in the assembly of devotees, and then he takes a stick and hits me on the head. That's what Lord Chaitanya compared that to. So lamenting seems to be the easiest way out of any situation. Oh, I can't do anything. And surprisingly, psychiatrists and doctors who study that, they have found out, you lose more energy while lamenting. Sometimes, getting the task done, whatever difficult task that could be, if you break it into some digestible bites, and you start working on it, of course there is some energy lost. But we should not think that if you are just sitting in a corner and lamenting, then the energy is conserved. No, it takes a lot, it drains you out of everything, whatever you have. So therefore, this lamenting is something which is the focal point of this particular purport. Just a side note, that even today we find even in sports, some sports which were like 5 days long, 3 days long, and no decision, people are bored with that. We want something quick. Either you lose or you win. I remember reading an old passage in an old book about two friends having their chess game, and the game would be for long, prolonged hours. One would have one chess piece in his hand, half removed from the chessboard, half touching it. And he would describe, why play such a game where you're not even convinced whether you should go this way or that way? Make a move. Do something. And so if I do this, then this will be lost. If I do that, this will be lost. So that's why even in a, like people claim chess to be a harmless game. It's war, by the way. Although very sober people would be sitting in front of each other. Make no mistake, it's war. Like some devotee wrote a book about Bhagavad Gita and the golf. And that had another passage about someone who wrote a book about golf, saying that playing golf seems to be like a retiree's pastime. Nothing to do and just make a swing. And he says, make no mistake, golf is war. So, excitement could be found even in something as simple as a chess game or a game of golf. But the fact is, what people don't like is this indecisiveness. And that's what ultimately is Arjuna's last objection to this fighting. I don't know whether it will be good for me or bad for me. Similarly, while taking to Krishna consciousness, we may have this kind of dilemma, whether it will be good for me or bad for me, whether it will be for my benefit or it will not work for my benefit. Everything can be ascertained by either our own experience, which is not a very good teacher, by somebody else's experience, but according to the Vedic philosophy, mostly by hearing from authorities. So here, just to give a very balanced kind of view, Prabhupada has in the beginning said he takes the atheistic class first. That let's say someone doesn't believe in the Vedantic theory or concept that there is something like soul. And today you will have many, many, many people who say that how can we believe a soul when we don't see it? And they are quite intelligent people in their own field. Or they say, if you claim there is a soul, then we need the means to see the soul. We need the means to ascertain its existence. But no, what Prabhupada is mentioning here is that, and especially in one book, Light of the Bhagavad, it is described that non-Vedic speculation is not 50 years old or 100 years old. Like we may feel, oh, this particular movement in the south is becoming very popular, or some particular Baba in the north is becoming very popular and they don't believe in the soul. It's all old hat. Non-belief in the soul is ages old. In Light of the Bhagavad, Prabhupada gives a partial list of this rogues gallery of, well, we would be the in their rogues gallery if they would be giving classes there. So Prabhupada sometimes gives these both parties even chance to put their position as to why they believe or why they don't believe. But we have Charvak, Buddha, Arhat, Kapil, Patanjali, Shankar, Vaikarana, Jaimini, Nyayaka, Vaisheshika, Sagunists, Empiricists, Pashupata Shaivists, Saguna Shaivists, Brahmos, Aryas, and Prabhupada adds later, the list of non-Vedic speculators grows daily. The list of non-Vedic speculators, he says, grows daily. Every day somebody would come up bringing his own variety, the same conclusion, but different variety of how he comes at that conclusion. This is the verse from the 10th canto, 20th chapter, 20th description of the autumn on which this book, Light of the Bhagavad, is based. 20th verse, in fact. Jalaughair nirbhidyanta setavo varshatishvare pashandi namas asad vadair ved marga kalau yatha. Jalaughair nirbhidyanta. So much of rain falls that a paddy farmer has made proper bund, you know, like a boundary on his paddy field. So Prabhupada compares acharyas, they always come and they work on this field, they make some proper boundary so that water should not go out. But what happens is, jalaughair nirbhidyanta, with the force of rain, setavo varshatishvare, here Ishvara is Lord Indra, who sends forth rain, pashandi nama asad vadair. Vad basically is a good thing. Krishna says, of all logic, I am vad. Vad pravadato ham. So vad doesn't mean vad vivad. We in Hindi or Marathi we say vad vivad is like quarreling. That is vitanda. But vad is actually between two very sober, gentlemanly people. A dialogue to find out what is the truth. But when there is a quarrel, altercation to find out who is correct, that's vitanda. Doesn't matter whether it is correct or not, but I defeated you, that's all. That's not what is referred to here. But pashandi nama asad vadair veda marga kalau yatha. That happens in Kali Yuga. That these people, with the force of time, of course, that boundary bursts open. And you have water spreading everywhere, just like these kind of doctrines spreading everywhere. Like in the communist countries, in the Soviet Union, it was illegal to preach that the soul exists. It was illegal. In Romania, if somebody is proved to be practicing transcendental meditation, he could be in jail. There is nothing like transcendence. Man is the modicum of happiness, prosperity, progress, everything. If man is progressed, automatically everybody before him, after him, below him, they're also said to be progressed. If something is good for man, that's it. Of course, we find this philosophy has this kind of garb of for man, But specifically then it becomes our man. Like Hitler loved people, his own variety more than anybody else. And so if I love my own people, then I kill others who are not my own. So therefore, this idea of just not understanding what a soul is, it is dangerous. But here, and also Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, in that verse which he begins with, Atha Chainam Nitya Jatam. Atha Cha means I'm starting a new topic now. Jayate, Na Jayate, Mriyate, Vak. These verses, Krishna gives a Vedic understanding. There is a soul, is never born, never dies, unborn, eternal, primeval, and all those things. This is Shabda Gyan, Shabda Praman. And then Krishna says, Atha Cha. And now Arjun, I don't believe you could be following that kind of doctrine. But if you feel that this knowledge is not correct, then still, Atha Chainam Nitya Jatam Nityam Va Manyase Hatam. If you feel that the soul is born along with the body, and the soul dies along with the body, still there is no need to lament. Why lament? You don't lament for the sun which set yesterday, did you? Oh, the sun set. So, no, there will be sun again tomorrow. Foolish people may think that I think the sun has been switched off. Now, we may think this is to be too foolish. Why? Because we as adults have seen so many days and so many nights, and we have this conviction that tomorrow there will be another dawn. The sun, nothing happened to the sun. The sun is right there. It's just invisible from my sight. Similarly, Vedantists or transcendentalists are saying the soul is present in one body, now it will be present in some other body. Why lament? If you see someone as a friend wearing one kind of shirt, one kind of trousers, the next day he comes in a different set of clothes, you say, where is my friend? You say, here I am. No, we don't say that. So although we identify somebody by the dress, we still know that he is a person wearing that dress. So much so far said about this thing called material lamentation, which is based on pure ignorance. And that's why this kind of lamentation is condemned. There is another lamentation. Lamentation as an emotion is not bad. You may say, how? Does lamentation have any presence in Krishna Leela? In the spiritual world, do we lament? Why should one lament in spiritual life? Material life, we know lamentation is based on ignorance. But pure devotees, why do they lament? Krishna, why does he lament? Krishna laments for those souls who have not yet turned their faces towards him. A pure devotee laments that he cannot be an effective instrument in the hands of Krishna. And even a Navasadhaka laments that all these years I served Maya, why I wasted my time. So this emotion of lamentation also has its pure stage in even spiritual life. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he came from Gaya, he came as a God intoxicated person. The one who would never even chant the name Krishna was now always chanting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. In fact, it is described that Gaudiya Vaishnavas, why do we specifically worship Lord Chaitanya's lamentation as, where are you Krishna, where are you? I want Krishna is a very lofty goal, and I am not getting it is a worthy spiritual lamentation. Oh, I want Krishna. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Pad recommends one kind of sadhana that Every day before retiring to rest, he advises devotees to take a stock of the whole day's events and lament that one whole day passed. I couldn't achieve Krishna. I could have done so many things. Why did I do this? Why did I do that? Of course, we know that as sadhana sadhakas, it will be a long time before we achieve our goal. But this kind of thing is worthy. It's part of our daily discipline. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at that time he was just Nimai Pandit. But now he was no longer a Pandit. He was not interested in scholarship. He was not interested in teaching students. He was shouting, "I lost Krishna." So Gaudiya Vaishnavas have this little bit of a cutting edge understanding. I had him once. As Lord Chaitanya said, I was going and there was a tamal tree. And just like this tamal tree, there was some boy who appeared before me. Oh, he was looking so beautiful. As I went to embrace him, he disappeared from my sight. And that is my lament, that I lost him. So the mood of Lord Chaitanya is, I had him, now I have lost him. So what difference does it make? If you say, I want Krishna, and I had Krishna and I lost him, what difference does it make? It makes a crucial difference that when you think I had Krishna and lost him, it makes you more humble. This extremely critical element of humility which is needed is available when you think that I had him once and now I have lost him. I have to regain his favor. So that is what Lord Chaitanya did. It is described in Chaitanya Bhagavat when he was about to inaugurate Harinam Sankirtan at Shiva's Angan. He started, sometimes he would become angry. He would say, I'll break the heads of all these Pashandis, these atheistic people. What do they think? They can get along with their nonsense? And Mother Shachi, poor woman, she would just cower around in the corner, look at her son. Few days ago, he was like a very brilliant scholar, always smiling, laughing, talking of his exploits. And now he's so changed, so much changed that he just started shouting Krishna, shrieking, beating the ground, sometimes beating the wall with his fists. And then the passers-by, neighbors would come and someone would say, whisper in their ears, malfunctioning of air, vata vikar. They would say, pagal ho gaya hai. Batul. You see this word, batul. It has vat. Someone say, give him coconut milk to drink. That will pacify him. One lady would come and say, tie up his hands and legs. Then he won't commit any mischief. One would shake his head and say, high stage of madness. You have to get Shiva ghee and massage his head. I don't know if that is still available. Shiva ghee or... But these ghees come in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Narayan ghee, Shiva ghee. So all these people, they would give these various kinds of remarks that he's gone mad. Some say, put him in a vat of ghee. Like take a big tank and put him there and then it'll cool him. Something has gone in his head. And she was so nonplussed. Don't know what to do. And finally one day when Shivas Thakur came, she said, Pandit, what happened to my son? At that time, Lord Chaitanya was in his mood, lamenting very strongly, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Is it some kind of vata vikar? He said, blessed me, vikar. Anytime I would accept this wholeheartedly, I want this kind of vikar. I want this kind of madness. He said, are you sure he's not mad? He says, no. This is a very high stage of Krishna prem. He says, this is, daughters, it is extraordinary. Not even great saints or the highest kind of devotees can show this kind of love for Krishna. And she said, oh, I'm so relieved. When Lord Chaitanya came on his external senses, he said, what happened to me, Shivas? He said, well, I'm praying that Krishna sometimes makes me just like the experience which you are getting now. Lord Chaitanya said, if you would have said, you too would have said that I am gone mad, I would have just jumped in the Ganga. So lamentation, Radharani laments for Krishna, pure devotees lament, sadhakas lament, and his whole conditioned universe laments. Lamentation as a emotion in the conditioned state is a binding force, while lamentation in the spiritual realm is a relishable item. That's what Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami describes in the Antya Leela. He says, Lord Chaitanya's heart outside is like a volcano about to erupt. Inside, it's like a shower of cool rain. How is it possible? But it is possible. So it is, as Navasadhakas, we have to understand, we don't need to get rid of emotions. Rash acting also won't be the solution for lamentation. When I mentioned we have to be decisive, doesn't mean that take anything which comes to your mind. Possibly you will repent much more. So exact understanding of what needs to be done, guided by authority. And that's what this thing is. That Yamaraj is pinpointing some defects that you are supposed to be mature people. They don't cry like this. Vriddha, we call somebody old Vriddha. Or there's a word Vriddhingat or Vriddhi, means acceleration, increase. Now what has increased in somebody who has just old age? He may say, I am 65 years old, I am 75 years old. I have experienced this world. What exactly have you experienced? There's a management joke about someone who didn't learn much, but always claimed, I am 23 years in this office. So you would always tell a newcomer, my boy, I have 23 years experience. One day one person put him in his place, said, look, you have only 1 year's experience, which is 23 years old. The kind of quality understanding you have, or your view on how things should be done in this office, this kind of understanding, anybody can get in 1 year. You just have it for 23 years. Similarly, if you have seen what's happening in this world for 60 years, 70 years, whatever, but if you still keep on lamenting about what's happening, that's not called experience. Real experience is seeing through the eyes of Shastra or seeing through the eyes of other authorities. And that's what makes you mature. Prabhupada's simple example, if a small boy asks his father, father, what is this? Microphone. Anyone asks him anytime, what was that? Microphone. How do you know? You can't even spell it. Tell me how it works. That I don't know. But that's a microphone. And is he wrong? No. Can he repair it? Can he spell it? No, he's too young. Prabhupada says, similarly, when somebody says, who is God? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a proof. Give me elaborate Vedic evidence that Krishna is God. Some new devotee may say, I don't know. Yeah, that means he's not God. No, he is. I just may not be able to prove it in front of you. In fact, I may not be able to prove it in front of my own life. But I have faith in what Prabhupada said. So therefore, we need not get experience of everything in spiritual life before we say with conviction that yes, this is it. So when Krishna is telling that one who is about to, one who has taken birth will be dead. Na anushochanti gata sun agata suncha na anushochanti pandava. No need to lament for somebody who is taken birth or who has changed his body. On a final note, what is the proof that Arjuna understood the Bhagavad Gita? Because when he was given the news that your son is killed, 5 warriors came together and they killed your son. Arjuna's reaction was, oh, he started crying. You might say, he heard all verses of Bhagavad Gita and again still is crying. That crying was the outpouring of a father's emotion for his dead son. He was a Vaishnav too. And then Arjuna again took up his bows and arrows and bow and started to fight. That is the proof that you have your emotions, but you don't give up your service. It's not that you are lamenting so much that now I can't perform any service. Oh, I'm so terribly sorry that I give up chanting. Well, that means a different thing. I'm so sad, I'm so angry with everything. I don't know why Krishna is doing this to me. Therefore, I increase my service. That is the standard. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.